Her body was discovered in a nearby wooded area.
She was stabbed 19 times and left for dead,
where two adults have been shot to death.
143 people have been murdered. Hundreds more have been shot.
She had been stabbed to death.
It was the bloodiest thing I think I've ever been to.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Dark and Deadly. We are your hosts. I am Haley.
And I'm Gina.
And formal apology for our longer than expected break. We had some personal stuff going on as well as the holidays, so we took a little break, but we are happy to be back. And
yes,
we are so overwhelmed with the amount of support we have received lately, even while not having new episodes coming out. So thank you so much to all our old and our new listeners. We hope you guys stick around. And if you are brand new or haven't already, follow us on Instagram for more true crime content as well as updates on our cases and episodes. And we also put up a survey once a month to determine what our topic episode is. And if you don't know what that is, basically once a month we do an episode where each of us covers a case that pertains to a topic that you guys vote on. So if you want a chance to get involved and vote for what topic you want to hear, follow us on there so you can be updated on when that survey goes live. And again, just thank you so much for all the support lately. We are like over the moon about it.
No, I sit there and I'm just overwhelmed about it. And I look at our Instagram and I'm like, oh my gosh, we got a new follower. That's so exciting. Each person that takes the time to listen to our podcast or follow us or like message us, any of it, we love it. We love talking with you guys. We love talking about true crime. And we're just so thankful and appreciative for every single person that, you know, takes the time out of their day to listen to us.
Yes, it is. It is amazing. So with that, are you ready, Gina?
Well, yes, but first, we had posted it on our Instagram page, and I'm going to pronounce her name wrong. I've listened to people say her name, and I'm still going to pronounce her wrong. Jazlyn Maxwell in the Epstein case. Mm-hmm. I had posted the trial tracker page for everyone to go follow to get updates, and it's an insane case in a couple ways. So it's about her essential career for Epstein as his madam. So procuring girls to give underage girls to give him massages, have sexual encounters with him, sleep with Epstein's powerful friends, like shady, illegal, horrible, disgusting things happened.
Right.
And I would have thought that the prosecution would have come out and had a stronger case. I'm slightly surprised in what's happened. So I believe the trial has only lasted about 3 weeks. When they were expecting like a 5-week trial, they were expecting all of these witnesses. The prosecution's already rested. And some of their witnesses, the girls who had the encounters with Epstein, like their testimony did not go well. Like got torn to shreds by her lawyers.
Right.
It was pretty sad. There is a couple people to follow. So the one that we had posted, and we'll post that one again. And then the other person to follow, and I've seen on her stories that it looks somewhat shadow banned almost, because people, when they go type in her name, like cannot find her. And let's see if I have that issue as well. No. Okay. So her username is House in Habit, and we'll post this on Instagram as well, but that's where I would go. She has all of the highlights saved. So you can click through, I think, see the updates from the trial as she's in it. So it's closed to media, but there's sections for the media to be in there. There's just no cameras. But she's been in the courtroom for the past couple days. Anyways, go follow her if you're interested at all. She gives really good updates. Sometimes at points it feels like she's maybe a bit not like sympathetic to dazzling, but maybe I don't know what other word besides the sympathetic.
Empathetic, maybe?
Maybe. Like, seems to admire her or use language that's a bit, like, fawny. Oh. It's uncomfortable, but really thorough reporting for the most part, except for, like, yeah, the one or two choice words I probably wouldn't have used.
You're like, I don't know about that, but okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's my spiel on Epstein and Maxwell.
Yeah, and then we'll have that also in the show notes as well, where to follow along for updates on that.
Perfect. And I mean, it's pretty much over. We'll see if she gets found guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So today I am covering a case that took almost 40 years to solve. And I absolutely love these cases that we're now seeing these cold, dead cases come back to life through the use of DNA.
Yes.
And then being able to search through, like, the genealogy. So this case deals with that. We're getting a case almost 40 years old, I think 39 years and some change.
Okay.
So Michelle Martinko reminds me a bit of, like, Reese Witherspoon. She's that, like, blonde, bubbly, sweet, smiley 18-year-old girl. And she's super
Reese
pretty.
Is,
like,
my favorite.
Right? And it's, you know, bubbly. And that's maybe, like, Legally Blonde-esque kind of, like, optimistic and sunshine coming out your backside.
Oh.
Just, like, yeah. Have you not heard that expression before?
No. I just went with it.
Oh. So, her friends describe her as a girly girl and someone that enjoyed dressing up. Michelle was born on October 6, 1961 in Cedar Rapids to Albert and Janet Martinko. She had one sister named Janelle, and Janelle was older than her, so Michelle was a later in life baby. Janelle in an interview said that Michelle and her mom were soulmates, and that after Michelle died, it was like a part of her mom died with her, and just her mom never really recovered after Michelle's death.
That would be me.
Right. I can't even fathom losing a child. So
nope.
I can't even.
I just looked her up though. She's so pretty.
Isn't she? Just like,
she has the cutest,
so smiley.
She has the cutest cheeks. I know mm-hmm. that's really weird to say, but she's got, like, these plump, sweet, like, little sugar plum cheeks.
So no, cute. She does. And she has, like, the Farrah Fawcett hair that people yeah. had back in the 70s.
Yeah. Yes.
So on the evening of December 19th, 1979, Michelle had gone to the mall with $180, which back then was a chunk of change.
Right.
It wasn't just, like, $180. Like, I mean, you know, inflation. And this was her first time going to this brand new mall that had just opened to look for a new winter coat. And this was directly after she had gone to her school choir banquet. So she was all dressed up for this, you know, looking good. Michelle ran into a classmate named Kurt Thomas. He had walked her to the main door and watched as she walked out to her car. He said that she had turned around and given him that Michelle smile. It was something that she was known for. Just, I think, like, a really big, like, toothy, smiley, cutesy
right.
grin. Yeah. And then he had went back to the men's store that he was working in at the mall. So he had seen her while on his break, I believe, and had walked her out to her car. But he didn't walk her all the way to her car. He just stopped right at the doors, and this was sometime between 8 and 9 p.m. when he had last seen her. When 2 a.m. rolls around and Michelle isn't home, her parents called the cops to report her as missing. The cops worked on retracing her steps, and by 4 a.m. the next morning, covered in blood and stab wounds, they found Michelle's body. She had never made it out of the mall parking lot. It was obvious to the police that she had struggled hard. There was over 20 stab wounds covering her chest, neck, and arms. So And this is all contained for the most part to the car itself. Jeez. So it's not like there's blood scattered around the car. It was mainly just in the car, in the cab of the car. Yeah. And it was, I mean, 20 stab wounds. We're talking brutal.
That seems so personal.
Right? It seems angry. Like you're expecting this to be someone that she knows.
And it's not.
Well, police determined from the lack of blood outside the car that Martinko had been killed while in the car. And the medical examiner later estimated she had died sometime between 8 and 10 p.m. So this is within the time that she had left the mall, had last been with Curtis. The murder weapon was sharp pointed, but not definitively a knife. And the medical examiner could not determine its size. So he couldn't tell necessarily by just like one of the wounds, which tells me it was probably a bit frenzied when the person was stabbing her. The killer had left no fingerprints, which led police to believe that they had worn gloves. A police spokesperson said that everyone's instinct is to say it was a guy because of how bad it was. And most murders, yeah. And most murders, like in a parking lot, you're expecting it to be a man. And I'm sure even back in like 79, even more so.
Yeah, definitely.
But they couldn't, you know, definitively say, yes, it was a man, or no, it was a woman. Based on cash found in her purse, police said that she hadn't been robbed because that $180 was still sitting there. She was fully dressed, and the medical examiner determined she had not been sexually assaulted.
So then what happened?
Well, that's the thing. Police agreed with you that, you know, it's personal nature just based off of that. I guess her not being sexually assaulted makes me feel less like this was a random person coming up to like rape a person. Does that make sense? Like, I'm not thinking it's just a random person that was like opportunist. If there's no robbery that's happening, there's no sexual assault that they could tell, that lends almost more to a woman also, to me.
So you think it's a woman? I mean, you know, well, how the case goes. But...
I know how the case goes. But just listening to that, if someone's been stabbed multiple times, there's no sexual assault, there's no robbery.
But it could also have been a man approached the vehicle, like, was trying to sexually assault her. She fought back. He stabbed her to death. Something spooked him and he left before, or maybe he's not like into necrophilia, so he didn't stick around to do that with her dead body. I don't know. I'm just thinking here.
Well, and isn't there something about, or maybe that's just about strangulation, about, is there like statistics about in what way you're killing somebody? Like, because you're looking somebody in the eyes, that makes it more personal.
Right. Well, you're sitting there saying that it was in her upper body, right? Where she was stabbed.
Yeah. So we're talking chest, neck, and arms.
So right. So front. Like neck and chest, neck and chest are pretty personal, I feel like. When you especially get into like somebody stabbing you in the face. Yeah. That's really personal because you're just obliterating their identity at that point. So,
right.
I mean, yeah, I feel like it seems pretty personal.
Or would it be the opposite because you wouldn't want to stare at somebody while you're murdering them?
I don't know, because if I was like trying, if I was trying to murder somebody that I didn't know, I probably, like, my first reaction, I don't know, if I had a knife, would my first, like, instinct, just how my arm moves, I would probably end up hitting somebody in, like, the stomach. But also, we're talking about somebody who's sitting in a car. So, you know what? Just don't listen to me because I'm not a murderer.
That makes me happy to know that. Within days of Michelle's murder, police received hundreds of phone calls and letters from people who wanted to help. The police chief at the time, Ray Baker, said the fetal stabbing outraged the whole community. And this is like, this is a small community, like a farming community. It's Cedar Rapids. So it's not, I don't believe in the 79, like a happening and bustling town. I don't even know if it is right now. Sorry to anyone from Cedar Rapids. I think Carly's from Cedar Rapids. No, Sioux City, not Cedar Rapids. Anyways, that doesn't matter. Hi, Carly. Hundreds of people were interviewed and countless leads were followed. As the investigation slowed, a $10,000 reward was offered. And on June 19th, 1980, police released a composite sketch developed based on descriptions provided by two witnesses of the man they believed stabbed Martinko. The sketch indicated a white man in his late teens to early 20s, weighing somewhere roughly between 165 and 175 pounds and standing about 6 feet tall. During the original investigation, detectives compiled a list of more than 80 potential suspects. There's two suspects that were closer to Michelle that, you know, were more highly considered and people that the family favored as potential murderers, essentially. Okay. One was Kurt Thomas, which makes sense because he was the last one to see her alive, and her ex-boyfriend, Andy. So nothing ever came from Kurt. He had an alibi because he went back to work to finish up the rest of his shift. So
okay,
his timeline to have gone out and brutally murdered her in the time frame from when it happened, it was a lot shorter, and he didn't come back, you know, bloodied or disheveled. So cops went pretty solid on his alibi. But Andy and Michelle's breakup is described as pretty rough, fairly toxic. And Michelle's sister, Janelle, had him as her number one suspect because there was really no one else she could think of. But he was ultimately ruled out as a suspect. He had an alibi. And sadly, Michelle's mom kept a diary. And up until her death, she still considered him and Kurt her number one and two suspects for the case. So her mom and her dad both passed away before the case was solved. And really, oh, no. From like 1980 on, it's a cold case. They didn't get any new leads that went anywhere. There was really no activity. And so unfortunately, they both died without knowing who killed their daughter.
That's so heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. That has to be so troubling. And it wasn't until 2006 that this case finally picked up a bit of steam when lab technicians were re-examining the evidence from the case and discovered blood on the dress Michelle was wearing. And this wasn't Michelle's blood. This was, they believed, the murderer's blood. Police released additional information about the suspect. They believed that during that time of Michelle's murder, the killer would have had a cut on his hand more than likely. And they also offered a $10,000 reward for any information leading to an arrest. So they took that original $10,000, which probably faded from everyone's mind. And they said, no, we're officially offering that $10,000 reward again. And since they finally had DNA evidence to go off of, detectives collected a sample from Michelle's ex-boyfriend and it came back as not a match. So he was cleared and was cleared in, you know, the family's eyes and probably the community's eyes, which I'm sure it's a smaller community. That rumor was like attached to those two guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm sure like Curtis was probably freaking out there for a little bit because I can't imagine being with somebody right before they were murdered, because obviously you're going to be talked to about it. And if like you didn't do anything, but you're one of the last people to see them,
mm-hmm.
that would be.
And he said rough. He said in interviews that he has regrets. He's like, why didn't I just walk her to her car? And I'm sure when you're a kid though, and you live in this community, you're thinking there's nothing that's going to happen here. We're fine. It's not a big deal. She can walk to her car. It's fine. Everyone leaves their doors unlocked. So Andy was totally relieved that he was not a suspect anymore. Yay for him.
Right. Good job, Andy. Thanks for not murdering.
Yes. But Kurt. So detectives had the sample and they wanted to get one from Kurt. And wouldn't you know it? He refused.
Wait, the one that I was just talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so I said Curtis. Now, I'm sorry. It's Kurt.
No, it's okay. I'm sure it's probably Curtis. Kurt was now married to a judge in Oklahoma. And he essentially, who, like, when he told her, like, hey, they're calling, they want me to give a DNA sample in this case from 79. And they've probably talked about it because, like, why wouldn't you? That's kind of noteworthy in your life.
Right.
And she said, over my dead body, are you doing that? So it wasn't so much that, like, Kurt didn't want to give a sample, more so his wife, who was a judge, said, no, not until we've talked to our lawyers. And that's what he did.
If you're innocent, then why?
Probably just because she didn't want anything weird happening. She wanted to make sure that, like, it's following normal protocol. They wanted to get their lawyer involved. I mean, if you talk to any child or any, like, lawyer or judge, they're going to tell you to talk to a lawyer first.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is the smart thing to do.
And I, but sure. it makes you look guilty because it does. You're refusing. It makes you look guilty.
Yep. It puts you in a very tough position.
Right. So he contacted his lawyer and started to talk through his lawyer. And cops, of course, now had him as his, their, like, number one suspect. And after his lawyer talked with the detectives, he gave a sample. So he did give a sample. He just, you know, went through his lawyer, which came back, luckily for him, negative, not a match.
Okay, good.
And then they went around and tested everyone that had a connection to Michelle. And I mean, probably a majority of the people offered it willingly. I didn't see anything where no one, like, refused, and nothing happened with the DNA sample after they found it. It wasn't until 2015 when Matt Denschlinger, sorry, Matt, took over the case. I'm going to butcher that. Denschlinger. I can't say it.
Oh, he is just going to go by Matt from here on out.
Pretty much. Matt, he actually brought this case pretty much into, like, the modern era. And in, from 2006 to 2015, I mean, technology advanced. He sent the DNA profile that they had to a lab that is able to take someone's DNA and create a sketch of what they estimate the person to look like. And this has been used in a bunch of cases, notably the Bear Brooks case. And if you haven't heard about Bear Brooks, there is, like, a 7 or 8 part podcast that is so wonderfully done. It's amazing. If you just type in, and 100% you have to, after you finish this episode, stop and go and listen to that one. It's amazing. They walk you through, and it's, like, in real time as he's doing the podcast, stuff's happening. But they used this in that case, and they were able to get an estimate of what these victims, Jane Doe's, looked like in that case. So it's something that, you know, has been used in cases before. Right. They released it to the public and were inundated with calls, about 200 calls of people thinking that they knew who it is. Ultimately, this turned up nothing new. They got no new leads from this, nothing that really went anywhere. And it wasn't until the Golden State Killer case getting solved that they would get their next big break. Using the same method that caught Joseph DeAngelo, they sent the killer's DNA into a similar database, and they got a hit, a partial hit to a woman in Seattle. And from there, they did the, they contacted, you know, a team of people who do this genealogical research for these cold cases now, and they narrowed it down to 3 brothers who were all living in Iowa. And after following the 3 men and collecting bits of trash from each of them, they found their match. Jerry Burns of Manchester, Iowa, the brother the detectives least expected for this, was arrested on December 19th, 2018, the 39th anniversary of Michelle Martingo's murder. Oh, and on Wednesday, justice. December 19th, isn't that just like the anniversary of the murder he was arrested, mm-hmm. 39 years. Ugh. The weird thing is that he could not offer a plausible explanation for why his DNA was found at the crime scene. He just kept saying, I don't know why it's there. Can't tell you. Don't know why it's there. And his arrest and like the detectives going to talk to him and say, like, we have your DNA, we know it's you, that is actually on YouTube. Okay. And if you just type in Jerry Burns on YouTube, you can watch the detectives. They had like a camera on them and you can watch the whole thing. It's a bit chilling how kind of calm he is the whole time. Just like weirdly calm.
Right.
His defense attorneys tried to say it's odd. And his defense attorneys tried to say that he had been to Westdale Mall with his family before, and DNA he left behind at the mall could have somehow transferred to Michelle while she was at the mall on December 19th. That makes absolutely, he would have had to have been like rubbing up against her.
Yeah.
For DNA from him to get onto her.
I think they need a new lawyer.
Right. I think one of the more damning things for Burns was that they played a recording from the YouTube video I was talking about after his arrest while he was in the squad car with the detective, in which Jerry questioned whether he could have blocked out the memory of committing the crime.
What? How old was he at the time?
He's in the back of the squad car. He would have been in his like 20s.
Okay.
Late 18, 19, 20, 21.
Okay, so close to her age.
Yes, around her age. But like, why would you ever in the back of a squad car decide that's the moment to give them any, like, you read your Miranda rights.
Yeah.
Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Like, that's said. Why would you then, in the back of the squad car with a detective sitting next to you, decide that's the time to be like, well, I mean, I could have just blocked this out of my memory. You're giving, like, that's a confession, I feel like.
Yeah, that's it's a little, what is the word I'm looking for?
Idiotic.
Well, that, and it's like, you just convicted yourself at this. At that moment.
That's what it feels like, though. That's totally what it feels like. After listening to almost 2 weeks of testimony, the jury returned the guilty verdict after deliberating just shy of 3 hours. On August 7th, 2020, Burns was sentenced to life in prison without parole. In September of 2020, he, of course, has filed appeal. And I will say, one of the things that they learned about him is his search history, and it was pretty graphic and like dark,
which makes
abusing women, that type of stuff, which
so it makes you think what has he done from that time on,
right? Well, and his DNA is in the system now, so, but there's so many issues with the backlogs in the country of rape kits. There are backlogs on top of backlogs on top of backlogs, and it's sad. So yeah, that's my case. He was thankfully caught. Unfortunately, it took 39 years, but he was caught, and Michelle now has justice.
Yeah, and I'm sure that,
but I couldn't find a motive.
Yeah, that's so strange. Like, I mean, it very well could have been what I said, though, too, is that he approached her, like, maybe was asking her out or whatever. She said no. He got mad because obviously he has some sort of anger issues if his search history is a little alarming. So he could have just snapped.
Yeah, he could have. It was just, ugh. No bueno.
Nope.
Isn't that a great ending? No bueno.
No bueno. The end. Ta-ta for now. I'm glad it was solved. I'm glad that it's sad that her parents didn't get to know who it was and see justice be served, but I'm sure her sister is like elated that somebody is finally taking responsibility for the crime.
Oh, totally. This has to be, I mean, she probably can feel like her mom and her dad can rest easy now. And
right.
It's a weight off her shoulder being the one that's carrying it and never having an update. Like, can you imagine if your sister was murdered and you never knew figured why out or who or yeah. how? Like, you don't know anything.
Right.
And always kind of looking over your shoulder and being like, who did it? Is he, like, still here in my community? Right.
Have I talked to him, shook his hand? Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah. That would be very haunting all the time.
Oh, yeah. But I will say the Bear Brooks murders, the that DNA method of the genealogy was also used.
Yeah.
Like, Golden State Killer kicked off it for everyone.
Right. I think that was kind of like an eye-opening thing for, you know, authorities and people in forensics. Like, this could really be something huge to solve cold cases.
Yep.
Like, it started out as being something so innocent as, like, where did my family come from? But it's like, now it's like, where did my family come from? You know?
Interestingly enough, it's not every, like, Ancestry or 23andMe that's doing it. You have to upload your results, at least from the last podcast I listened to, you have to upload your results into a couple of services, and that is what links it to the police databases where they can use it, because I don't think they can just go into like 23andMe or ancestry.com and do it within there.
Right. I think it would definitely probably have to have a search warrant for something like that.
Yes, you would have to, but this other service allows it.
Yeah.
They allow the cops to go in.
Which is good.
I agree. But, I mean, at the same time, there are... You never want something to get abused.
Right. Right.
Or you don't want to lose personal freedoms in the name. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like a fine line. Of, like, what you allow the government to do and what you don't allow them to do.
Yes, because everybody deserves, you know, some sort of privacy. We don't need the government knowing everything that we do.
If you murder someone.
But if you murder somebody, like, that is the right. The authorities have a right to know that. Yeah. So it's a very thin line. Yeah. Well, that was sad, but, like, good ending, because unsolved cases, they haunt me. I love hearing about them. They're so interesting, but they keep me up at night sometimes.
When I had just started getting into podcasts, the Case Files, like, series on the Golden State Killer, this was like 2017, I think. Yeah, I think 2017. So. And it was before he was found. Maybe that was 2017, somewhere in there. I had listened to the podcast and I found it and I was paranoid. I was like, this man is out there still. And granted, he would have been like an old man. But just the idea that there are people that are that evil just
walking the streets.
Yes. Terrifying.
It's terrifying.
Terrifying. I was like, I need a security system. I need so many different things. I need to learn how to use a gun.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because it's scary. Know. No. And that man got away with it forever.
Yep. And I'm sure that he thought after some time had passed that he was never going to get caught.
Oh, no. But he would, like, call and harass the woman after the fact, too. I think one of them received calls like the 90s.
Ugh, disgusting.
Right. My voice is going out. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in and listening.
Yes, thank you so much. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Dark and Dudley Pod. We do have a TikTok. Again, we need to be more active on there. We suck. Also at Dark and Dudley Pod. And tune in every week for a new episode, usually on Mondays, but sometimes sometimes they fall later in the week, but just turn your notifications on and we'll be there wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you so much, everybody. We hope you have a fantastic week. Bye.